What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Broadcasting live from the greatest city in the world.
Austin, Texas, baby.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
You guys want to play some twos?
You know what? Actually, we're kind of in the middle of a conversation.
B&E.
What's B&E?
Bucky Godbolt, Aaron Hogan on the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260 and hornfm.com with the Longhorns Play and Austin Talks Sports.
B&E with you, Bucky back on Monday. Johnny Rogers is in the house.
Help.
But it could be B because you're now Buck Rogers after the Blitz. Buck Rogers.
Did you ever like that show? Buck off to Buck Rogers?
Yeah, did you ever like that show growing up, Buck Rogers?
I don't. That's a little bit before my time. I've heard of it, but don't know too much about Buck. I was more of a Fred Rogers fan.
Yeah, Mr. Rogers, yeah. You see the Tom Hanks movie about him, the portrayal?
Yeah, really good.
Something, I forget what it's called, Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Was pretty good.
Or Won't You Be My Neighbor.
Won't You Be My Neighbor, whatever it was. But yeah, Buck Rogers in the 25th century was the TV show back
okay.
then. Yeah, you could be Buck Rogers.
I could do that.
Sci-fi.
I think I got the same jawline as that guy.
Two seasons that thing ran. 79 to 81. So yeah, I remember it because I was seven or eight years old when that was on.
I was born.
I had just been born
in March of 79.
Yeah, and as we say, your father, Randy, who's come on the show a lot, talking about high school football.
Yeah.
I mean, before there was Flex ATX and Snoop, there was your dad.
It was Triple R,
Randy yeah. Rogers. And he coached with Bucky on the Texas Stavs. And
at Illinois. Bucky was literally Uncle Buck when I was a kid.
Yeah, growing up.
Took care of us.
Yeah, he did. And then you all moved down here, coached at Texas, and that's the rest is history.
The McAvick years, baby.
The McAvick years. The rest is history. And so bears repeating, though, we've talked about Steve Sarkisian in Texas. And, you know, as a realtor, mm-hmm. I don't think I'm giving away confidential info. You've helped a lot of these Texas football coaches.
I've worked with a few of them.
Find homes,
mm-hmm.
find residences in Austin, Texas. And I really like, you don't talk about it a lot, but you know, you as a local real estate agent for a long, long time and realtor and developer, yep. you and you're a coach's son. And brothers are both coaches.
I'm in the mix of pretty much everything.
So you have intimate knowledge of the life of a coach and
sure.
what it's like to move as often and families moving. And so you've really taken up in that realm of helping, whether it's the Austin FC coaches or college football coaches or even the Longhorn coaches, find places to live and settle.
Well, it's never about the actual coaches, right? It's about the coaches' wives.
Yes,
because when the coaches get here, they're going to work.
Yeah,
right. They're going to work. They're out in the morning. They're coming home late at night. They're trying to put in the work. It's the wives and girlfriends and fiancés who are moving to a town that they've never been to before. They need new attorneys. They need hairstylists, doctors, places to eat, happy hours. So you really have to be that connection to the city for those people. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And one thing I do want to point out about this coaching staff in particular that's here right now, this is the first coaching staff on the 40 acres, really since, well, I guess the year after Mac. But these guys know what it takes to win a national championship. They know the kinds of players you need to have on campus. They know the kinds of schemes. And they're starting to put Texas in those positions. Now, I'm not saying they're going to win a national championship in the next year or two, but Texas and these guys, they've got the experience, they know what it takes, and they're going out and they're getting it.
Well, and I think that's a smart assessment because I agree with you. And, Mac Brown, I always go back to this. When Mac got Texas rolling, it was about his dynamic personality,
yep.
ability to recruit, and consistency and continuity on his coaching staff.
Correct. And
really, Mac would tell you that if he was sitting right here. He came in and, Texas to replace John McAvick and – won a Heisman Trophy in year one. That helped spring the recruiting. But Mac was adamant as he was building the program that continuity within his coaching staff, coordinators, coaches, is paramount to growing the program. And
what did you see at the end of Mac's career?
Right.
A lot of these guys getting
picked
off.
Right? That's exactly right. And he was exactly right. And the continuity among the entire staff from recruiting on up, paid off in the best 10-year run in the history of the program.
Mm-hmm.
With a couple Rose Bowls, a national championship, a second appearance in a national championship game. And gosh, the 08 season, they were, think about it, when Mac's career, in 01, when they lost the Big 12 championship game to Colorado. Yep. If they win that, and Chris Sims and the whole thing, they play in a national championship in 01. Mm-hmm. If and then they were in it in 05, 08 with Colton Chip and Quan.
That was a year.
I mean, that team we all know, with the Texas Tech stumble and that game, and then it was Oklahoma and Florida. How the way the Big 12 was decided. But so Mack gave Texas and that staff, let's put that staff, because he was big on the cohesion.
Sure.
And I know along the 10-year run, they lost some defensive coordinators who moved on to new jobs. Carl Reese retired.
Yeah.
But Greg Robinson got a head coaching job at Syracuse.
Left.
Yeah, those guys moved up.
Yeah.
But Mack, kept Greg Davis. He kept the offensive staff intact and kept the brain trust together.
Consistency.
For a long period of time, which helped to the success of the program. I mean, they had a look. They played in two national title games, 1-1, and had a look at two others. So four seasons, they were in contention for the national championship. That is the best run. They haven't been close to that. But to your point, starting in 2010, after they lost to Alabama, Mack Brown... Remember, that was the coach in waiting year.
Yep.
That was, we're handing this thing to Will Muschamp. And he was going to keep the consistency. He was going to do it the Mack way. He was going to bring in some of his own coaches to build his first staff at Texas. And then they lost to Alabama. Mack stopped that process,
just
which sent the program
up
into a tailspin. I really believe that's where it began. And what did Mack do? They came back the next year, kept everybody in place. They were disgruntled because of the way it all went down. And they went 5-7. Mack changed the offense, and it just fell
apart.
You
start tinkering in your later years.
And then, so point being, then after the 5-7, Mack fired the whole staff. That was Mack's brain trust. Mm-hmm. He could never hire the staff that understood him like they did.
The foundation was gone at that point.
And I don't know that Texas has ever gotten it back because Mack never got it. I know he felt like the year they went 8-5 and lost Art Briles and the Baylor and the what would have been the Big 12. A chance to go to the Big 12 title game, that was the year it was over for him. Charlie Strong came in under bad circumstances with the fan base that was split and bitter about the whole Nick Saban thing and Mack and all of it, right? Steve Patterson's on board. And Charlie never really, I don't think his coaching staffs were. He was changing coordinators every year.
Yeah.
We know how Tom
Herman wasn't a good fit.
Tom Herman's hire was kind of a shotgun hire, even though he was the coach in demand, the popular coach hire. Mm-hmm. He brought all of his coaching staff with him, which I think most would say were in over their head a little bit to be competed at the Texas level.
Yep.
And we know how that went. Well, now here you are, to your point. Steve Sarkisian is in. He's been a head coach a couple of times. His overall win-loss record would tell you he's still got a lot to prove as a head football coach. But what the success at Alabama, the success as a coordinator at USC, and now the staff he's built here who have championship pedigrees, who I think Sark's going to stick with.
There's really no turnover from last year, right?
Well,
I mean, there wasn't any major move.
Stan Drayton got the head coaching job at Temple.
Right.
And so they hired Tashard Choice, which was a strong choice. And then Brennan Marion replaced Andre Campbell. Campbell was one of the remaining holdover coaches that Sark kept that he decided we need to upgrade that spot.
Yeah.
But I do think, as a brain trust, this is it moving forward. I mean, this is – now, again, if things go poorly on defense this year, Pete Kwiatkowski – that conversation is going to be had, but at the same time, I agree with you that for the first time since early on in Mack Brown and into the later part of the first part of this century, there needs to be cohesion, and I think they have the right group of coaches together who can usher Texas into the SEC in years to come.
Yeah, their job's going to depend on it.
Yeah, it will. It will, but you've been around coaches your whole life, and you've been around these coaches, whether it be Kyle Flood or Jeff Banks, are high level coaches.
And I was around Gary Patterson a bunch back in past 20 years. Saw a whole bunch of him, but I'm anxious to see what he does and what he adds to this coaching staff. Is he going to be able to step in and help Pete Kwiatkowski out? Because you got to remember, Pete is from the Northwest. He's used to kind of that Pac-12 style of offense and guarding against that. Comes down to Texas. Brand new style of offense. Now Gary's here to help him out. Hopefully it works together Texas can start really getting after the defensive side of
the ball. And Zay, can we hear from Coach Sark after practice last night? Because he talked about the defensive changes. And one of the things he said after practice yesterday is one of the issues we're having with our quarterback decision is our defense is playing so much better. Like our defense is really getting after it. Here's Sark talking about the changes they made and what he has seen from the defense through 2.5 weeks of camp headed into tomorrow's all-important scrimmage.
The biggest change is just the emphasis on getting to the ball and then the proper technique, but getting to the ball. Like, we are taking a lot of pride in playing with fanatical effort on defense. I think our coaches have done a really nice job of emphasizing it. I think that the players are taking pride in it, and then we're celebrating it. You know, we're celebrating it in the meetings, and we're talking effort every day. Because, hey, especially early in season when, you know, we can't afford to tackle every single day. You know, we won't make it 25 practices. So you have to make sure you keep putting yourself in position, because early in the year, those games, sometimes the missed tackle rate is a little higher, unfortunately. And I think that's just about for everybody. You got to make sure you got more and more hats around that ball to not just get the man on the ground, but hopefully get a punch out. That ball comes loose. We're getting fumbles. And that's one thing I think defensively I've seen too, is that, you know, when there's tips and overthrows, when the ball's getting knocked out, man, it sure feels like we're recovering a lot of those on defense right now as opposed to a year ago.
Year ago. And, you know, again, there's still questions, I think, in the back end. I think there's questions all over the defense. Sark continues to single out Vernon Broughton and Byron Murphy as being Byron Murphy as being guys who bring it every day. Diamante Tucker Dorsey, the linebacker who transferred in from James Madison, continues to be a ball hawk and been playing well. We know what DeMarvion Overshown can be. And, you know, Baron Sorrells continues to be a guy that people are talking about off the edge. He would be one of your starting edge players along with Ovi Agofu.
And don't forget about Justice Finkley.
And, well, Justice the freshman, I think those guys are going to work their way into the rotation. And then a guy, you know, the secondary is a question mark, but I do know you've heard good things on Jalen Gilbo, the freshman from Port Arthur, who's just showing up and making plays each practice.
Yeah, Texas isn't necessarily a very aggressive style of defense against the run. They'd rather have an extra passing guy in there, bring in a nickel at that star position. Jalen Gilbo's just crushing it right now, and you got local kid Michael Taft waiting behind him.
Mookie.
The GOAT.
Yeah, man.
The greatest recruiter in University of Texas history.
Obviously, though, the defense in those positions will solidify. You know, Jade Barron is, you know, been running as the starting star player, but he's been battling a little bit of an injury, and this gives Jalen Gilbo a chance to play, and this would go to the Bucky statement he always makes: if he's good enough, he's old enough. I don't care what his grade is. And there's a kid, Jameer Johnson, to watch. Here's another thing on defense I find interesting. There's a kid, Jameer Johnson, who was part of that recruiting class last year. He's from Pasadena, California, and he redshirted last year, so you didn't hear much of him. But apparently he's balling out in practice, and he's pushing Ryan Watts. Of course, Ryan Watts is the transfer from Ohio State, the big lean corner. And I found it interesting that I heard Chip Brown on with Mike Harge earlier this week when Rod was out on Ball Don't Lie, and he said he was standing at practice, the open practice with Michael Griffin, and Michael Griffin was like, "That guy's a safety." Ryan, that dude's a safety.
Right.
You say what you want, but he's a safety. You know, that'll be interesting. If Ryan Watts continues to struggle in coverage and Jameer Johnson is pushing him, could you use Ryan Watts as a versatile player, his size and length and ranginess, as a safety potentially, because you're trying to get more speed on the field at that position? I'll be interested to see how this evolves, because you know this too. Camp is camp. Once the games begin, your team continues to evolve pretty dramatically of who's getting it done, who's not.
Yeah, and a lot of those new guys, you know, you need to get in the first couple of games, get some experience so you can set yourself up later in the year for success.
And, you know, Alabama's week two, right? And they can only beat you one time, but you got to be...
Maybe not. If they could beat you a couple more times if you,
if you let them get
into your head. Well,
that's why I'm saying that's got to be the mindset.
Right, okay.
That game, we're going to go in and give our punchers chance, and that's going to make us better playing that football team, and it's not going to beat us. Look, I think last year they got punched in the mouth by Arkansas and it was ugly, but that sprung them to some of their best football of the season.
Sure.
They turned around and actually played really well. They won, beat TCU up there 4-1 in that Oklahoma game and up, you know, almost 20 points and late in the game and could not hold that lead. Okay, so that's the conversation on defense. Offense, obviously, it's about quarterbacks. Can we hear Sark yesterday talking about how to help Quinn be comfortable? Because that's the one thing we keep hearing. He's really good if the play lines up like he wants it. If the play breaks down, this is where problems come. And he's taken some sacks. He's thrown the ball to the other side too often. And they need him to get comfortable. Here's Sark from a quarterback talking about how to maybe make Quinn feel more comfortable in this offense.
Yeah, I think one of our challenges is, one, we had spring ball to assess his strengths and maybe some things we know he needed to work on. We tried to work on those things in the summer. Then you try to address those things. You reevaluate kind of that first week of camp, and then you try to address it again. And then what you try to do is when they play is put them in position to do the things that they do well. And Quinn's no different. When he's playing, we're trying to call the things that I know he does well while we're still working on some of those other areas that we know he can improve upon as we grow. And that would be no different for Quinn or for Hud or for anybody. You know, we really try as a staff to put our players in the best position to be successful. The quarterback is the easy one to see, right? And so if there's some intricacies in the game that maybe aren't as fluid for him right now, that's our job not to put him in that position to do those things yet until we keep repping it with him to get him feeling really good about it.
All right, so big scrimmage tomorrow, Johnny. Big scrimmage, and for folks, I mean, this is one, well, they're – you know, the first scrimmage was the first scrimmage. You try to clean up those mistakes and come back this week and be better. And the guys who have shown that ability to, A, be consistent through both scrimmages or improve and really take the steps the coaches are talking about are going to be declared the starters come next week, because that two-deep depth chart will be firmed up next week. They're going to start install for Louisiana Monroe, and it's game time. I mean, it's time to stop training camp and training, and now you're getting ready for an opponent.
It's like that 8 Mile moment.
Yeah.
You know, it's you got to take this moment and you got to go out and get it, because it's season's about to start, and if you want to play, you better. Saturday is it? Tomorrow is a great opportunity for you to make that final exclamation point that this is my job.
Yeah, because if it is, I mean, again, you know this, when you get into next week and you start prepping and installing for Louisiana Monroe, and I think probably a little Alabama in there too. The ones are going to get a majority of the reps, and if you're a one. You know, I mean, Bijan Robinson's a one, Xavier Worthy's a one, but who at these other crucial battles, including quarterback, who's running out there? Is it Kelvin Banks at left tackle? Is it Devon Campbell at right guard? You know, where do they line up? And next week will really tell you where this depth chart is headed ahead of the game, because, again, camp portion kind of rolls away, and it's preparation, because the following week, game week, and now you're fully into a game week mode to get ready for La Monroe. Heck, there's games this weekend, though. How about this quote from Scott Frost, the coach at Nebraska? They're going to be a part of that 0 week next Saturday, 8 days from today, playing Northwestern. And I didn't know until this morning they're playing that game in Dublin, Ireland. That's pretty cool.
Really?
Yeah, they're playing that game in Ireland. And yesterday, Scott Frost announced that his quarterback will be Casey Thompson, starter for most of the year last year for Texas. He will be the starting quarterback. He won a battle with two others, and we'll start there. And he also said that he would count that his new offensive line coach has come in, and he projects that they've had 15 to 20 vomit situations per practice. 15 to 20 vomit,
is this,
vomiting occurrences.
And why is that?
He said it's not because they're out of shape. He says it's because they're working them hard.
Is he also restricting water breaks while he's at it?
I don't know.
I mean, this sounds very old school mentality where it's like, you're trying to weed people out at this point.
Hey, Junction boys, where's Jack Pardee when you need him? What are we talking about here? What are we doing? But yeah, I mean, 15 to 20 vomits per practice, that's probably not a good sign.
It's not good, Scott.
I mean, but they're going to Ireland to play. That'll be 8 days against Pat Fitzgerald's Northwestern Wildcats. I do like this about the Big Ten, that they play that conference game week one. Everybody plays a conference game. Really launch the conference. I know the coaches hate it. I mean, the coaches don't like that you're having to play an actual conference game in the first game of the year with no ramp up, because we all know what the first few games are to get you ready for conference.
Yep.
Big Ten comes out with a bang.
So with the new realignment going on right now, is there going to be some consideration for non-conference schedules? Like meaning like we're going to get rid of Alabama playing Southwest Louisiana State Tech?
We'll pick that up on the other side. That's interesting. As we horn drive one more time and spotlight the number six team in our countdown, I think if it lines up with the expanded college football playoff, I think we could actually get more good games, my opinion. We'll talk about that coming up. Also, more from the NFL. You know, sometimes in PR, when a thing resolves like the Deshaun Watson story and the appeal is off now and a settlement is in for the owner, just take the news and move on.
Take the L and move on.
Just go.
It's done.
Why did he have to hold a press conference yesterday? I don't know. But Jimmy Haslam probably shouldn't have. We'll get into that coming up. Deshaun Watson as well. But, man, plenty of college football. Friday on the Horn, wet and rainy. Be careful out there, folks. It is a mess. Can't complain about it because we need it desperately. But it does make for slick streets. So keep yourself safe. It's B&E on the Horn.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
Big stories out there, including the Longhorns, the quarterback. I was just looking online, the trending topic of Steve Sarkisian, Quinn Ewers, the quarterback decision. Safe to say, if orangebloods.com is on point and they do good reporting over there, they've said, multiple sources have said, the lean is Hudson Card at this point. Mm-hmm. And unless something dramatic changes tomorrow at the scrimmage, that's going to be the direction. It's safe to say there'll be a grass fire in Longhorn Nation. I mean, there'll be, because as Brian Davis from the Austin American Statesman told us earlier, you know, a large majority of the fan base is, you know, they're not paying attention to training camp like we are, and, you know, play by play, practice by practice. There's just an expectation that it's going to be Quinn Ewers. And
where are a lot of these reports coming from? Because most of these practices are closed practices, right?
Well, again, they have that's the thing. Whichever one of the sites you choose, or all of them, they all have their sources.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, Jeff and his team have been doing it for a long time. We love Bobby Burton and the team over at Inside Texas. Obviously, Jeff Howe, Chip Brown, all that crew at Horns 24/7. Mm-hmm. I mean, they all do a good job. And, you know, the reporter doesn't give up his sources, so we don't know who the sources are. But that's which one do you trust? Again, it does feel like there's a push that a lot of people are coming around to that it may very well be Hudson Card.
Mm-hmm.
And my question on that is, if it is Hudson Card, has this come as a surprise to Sark? Because Sark also said going into camp he had a nice feel.
Idea.
He had an idea,
right.
And he wanted to name it quicker than he did last year, which if he names it Monday, that's much quicker than he did last year. Or has this thing kind of played out like he thought it might, which is interesting. And if that's the case, I don't know. Or has Sark been surprised that, you know, Quinn just has not? Because if Hudson Card wins this job, people are talking about, well, if it's even, go with Quinn. If Quinn can't even bring it to even, that would indicate that Hudson Card has outplayed him.
Right.
Pretty significantly, because I am of the opinion that with a freshman quarterback of this kind of talent, if he's even with your third year player, I'm going high ceiling. I'm going with if my third year player can't pull away from the true freshman who's or first year player who's just walking in here, then I got to go with the higher ceiling. If they're dead even, then I think it's Quinn Ewers. But if Card is. That would tell me he's significantly outplayed Quinn Ewers in these first couple of weeks, and we'll see what happens tomorrow.
Yeah, if it is Card, you know, and they go into that Alabama game with him as the starter, again, you're going to see Ewers play. And maybe Card just becomes that sacrificial lamb that goes out there, takes the beating at first, and then maybe there's an opportunity for Ewers to come in, play well, and really set himself as the starter for the rest of the year.
Yeah, we'll see. And look, I mean, that was – remember last year, the conversation was, how did Hudson Card end up winning the job? He was more consistent in practice.
Yeah.
He made fewer mistakes. And Casey Thompson was mistake-prone. He wasn't a great practice player. He was late for a couple of, you know, practices, and that was not showing the leadership they were looking for. The immediacy wasn't there. So, you know, it split the Card. You know, are we having the same thing? Because, you know, is Quinn Ewers a big-time player? We don't know yet. We kind of know there's more of a known commodity with Hudson. I would say one thing about Hudson Card, because everybody goes back to that Arkansas game last year, which was really ugly.
I was there.
I was there, too, in the stadium, deer in the headlights. Look, I get it. But if you go back, remember the game late in the year when he got in the game and then got hurt? I believe it was against West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
He was playing pretty good. I mean, he looked like a different player. And, again, players can develop. Players can evolve. Players can improve. I know Quinn Ewers is the big name, and he's got all the NIL deals and all that, but Hudson Card was not a slouch. He was a four-star quarterback, sometime, you know, coming out of high school at Lake Travis. If he's improved enough to run this offense, because that's what it's about. When you've got the best running back in the country, and you've got wide receivers like they have, and you have with tight ends that have come in, it's about someone who can run the offense and avoid mistakes and move the chains and put you in the end zone. You know, that doesn't there's a conversation here, and we said it a couple times, that could, and again, I don't think Texas is winning the national championship, so don't get me twisted here.
Right.
But in 2020, Sark had a decision to make between a five-star hotshot freshman, Bryce Young, out of California, top recruit, against a guy who, I want to say journeyman kind of in the program, in Mac Jones, who had been the backup to Tua for years.
Mm-hmm.
And most at Alabama just assumed it was going to be Bryce Young. The hotshot freshman will beat him. Well, guess what? Mac Jones won the job, and it took him to the final week of game prep. And Mac Jones took him to the national championship that year in 2020. So I think kind of the same thing. There would have been no doubt that Bryce Young is the higher ceiling player. And Mac Jones ends up a first-round draft pick. We'll see where he goes with New England Patriots. He put a lot of time in and worked his tail off. And if you remember the conversation about Mac Jones and the improvement he made into that season, like knowing this was his chance, I mean, the work he put in to improve showed up, and he won the job away from Bryce Young and won a national championship and made himself an NFL player. Who we don't know that Hudson Card hasn't put in that kind of work this offseason.
We just don't know.
Yeah, and that's where the decision likely presents itself tomorrow at the scrimmage. Hey, real quick before we get to the Horn Top 20 countdown, the question you asked about college football expansion, does it change like these great non-conference cross-sectional big games? Here's my thought on that. Sure it will. I mean, if you're playing 16 games and you're playing nine-game conference schedules, you're going to be less inclined to play really tough non-conference games. But if the college football playoff expands to 12 teams or 16 teams or certainly to 8 teams, whatever it becomes, and there's a conference championship kind of tie into it, then I think you will see teams. Look, if we could lose all three of our non-conference games and still have a path to the championship because we won our conference, that would, to me, incline teams to play tough games to be ready for the conference.
Right.
There'll be coaches who agree and disagree on that. But if the playoff, as long as it stays at four, and I think your likelihood to say, I don't want to play these really tough non-conference games if I'm in these mega conferences where I got to play all these tough teams, I'm going to not want to do that. I'm going to play Louisiana Monroe. But if it expands and there's a way to get in there even with a loss or two, then I think it you'll see these good matchups in September.
I mean, I just think that if we're gonna do the non-conference thing, let's make it fair, right? And how do you do that? You take all, say, 100 and what? How many teams are in Division I? 120, 130? You know, tier them out. Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3. And you have to non-conference schedule play a Tier 3 team. You know what I mean? Like, you've got to
make
it.
One of each.
One of each, yeah. You play a 1, you play a 2, you play a 3, and then you play your conference.
I like it. That's interesting.
So that way you're not playing a bunch of Tier 3 teams, you know, three of those, and they're all easy W's. But, yeah, it punishes somebody, you know, for playing a tough non-conference game in the very beginning. And that's what all the fans want. We want good games.
It says Mac Jones, Bryce Young, Hudson Card. Which quarterback would you rather have? Exactly. You can't compare apples to oranges. Yeah. I'm talking about the battle. I mean, Steve Sarkisian has a decision to make between a more veteran player who's more comfortable in the offense versus a more talented player who has a higher ceiling. There's a side to be argued that he owes it to the team to give it to the player who has the best chance to help them win the most games this year.
Great.
And make the fewest mistakes this year. Not ride with the quarterback who's going to be the guy, but it's going to take some lumps, and it's going to be like Sam Ehlinger as a freshman when he was your only option, right? I mean, once Shane Bouchel got hurt, you had to ride with Sam, and here Sark has an option. He can go with a veteran player, more familiar. These are the decisions I'm sure that are spinning his head. I mean, these are tough calls. It's a tough call. Hey, let's real quick, one more spotlight on the top Horn Top 20. It's number 6 on our countdown to number 1.
When you put that uniform on, you better come to work.
It's the Horn Top 20, brought to you by Allstat Beer. No impurities, no regrets. Number 6, the USC Trojans.
Love the fight song. Now, somebody texted us and said this is not the real – texted us and said this is not the real UFC fight song. Is that true?
I mean, there might be a fight song, but this is like
– the anthem.
I mean, like, the Eyes of Texas isn't the Texas fight song, but it's most recognizable, like, music that comes from them. And that's, I think, what this is for USC.
Okay. Well, this is
Fight on.
I mean, there's a USC fight song that is fanfare tribute to Troy, and then there's a USC fight song called "Fight On." I don't know. Who knows? This is a leap. I think they're going to win the Pac-12. Sorry, Utah. I think superior athletes and superior coaching will win it. I'm putting too much stock in Lincoln Riley, but I watched what he did at Oklahoma, both as the coordinator when he came in from East Carolina when Bob Stoops hired him, and immediately the offense went through the roof. Through the roof. And, Heisman Trophy winners, Heisman Trophy contenders, quarterbacks, just – and the offense was prolific. I expect similar performance from the offense at USC, even in year one, especially with a quarterback who knows the system because he played in it last year. You're telling me you take Mario Williams, who was the best receiver at Oklahoma last year and a favorite target of the young quarterback Caleb Williams, and you add the Biletnikoff winner in Jordan Addison, and you add a top-end running back Travis Dye from Oregon, they had eight returning starters on offense anyhow.
Yeah.
So you have and yes, they went 4-8.
And now six brand-new guys transfer from big-time schools. They're going to be deep, too.
Yeah, and the question will be defense. Question will be defense with Alex Grinch and what's left in the cupboard. There's only three returning starters, but that's going to be the big challenge on the defensive side of the ball. And obviously a bad defense will get you beat, even with a good offense. But just the way – and look, so the Pac-12 is not a strong conference, right? We can all agree to that.
Three or four good
teams. Utah's the best team.
No doubt.
And Lincoln Riley, it's similar to when he was in the Big 12. I mean, Texas was down. There weren't really great teams in the Big 12. And even with a bad defense, they won the Big 12.
Yeah.
They did it with 40 and 50-point games, but they outscored their opponents. And then, of course, they would get into the Final Four and get, you know, give up 50 and get beat by Georgia or get beat by Alabama because their defense wasn't good enough. But no one in the Big 12 could expose that.
Yeah.
I kind of think it's similar in the Pac-12 if the offense gels early.
I don't know if the Pac-12's ever seen an offense like Lincoln's got, at least recently. I mean, he's going to come in there, and they will be tossing the ball around, and they'll be scoring a lot of points.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, listen, people. I know people who root for Oklahoma will say, well, no, well, good riddance, Lincoln. But look, how many times in the offseason did Oklahoma fans rue the day that he was going to leave for the NFL and the Dallas Cowboys were going to hire him, or the Green Bay Packers tried to hire him, or Arizona Cardinals end up with Cliff Kingsbury.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's – he's a high-level football coach on the offensive side of the ball. They are going to outscore the Pac-12 with a dynamic play caller and dynamic players. I mean, you're giving Lincoln Riley an all-star team on offense with a quarterback he is familiar with. Yes, the defense will be questionable, but the schedule's favorable. And again, I think they're the talent class of the conference. Sorry, Utah.
Sorry. But that'll be a great game when Utah and USC play.
Okay, so it says Buck Rogers, you're off your rocker. That is the most noticeable theme you hear from USC,
yeah.
But that is not the real fight song. Please play the real fight
song. This is my hater. He keeps throwing jabs at me, but I keep coming back at him.
He said, that song was tribute to Troy. There's also an actual fight song, and if they win, the conquest song. Those are the three most recognizable.
Okay.
Ooh, here you go, Zay.
Is this like when Achilles shows up to the battle?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, the men of Troy.
Yeah.
I like it. Thank you, Zay. That's a way to bring that strong. All right, we'll come back. We'll take your thoughts. I know that's controversial that USC would be six, but I think they're winning the Pac-12, so I put them there. We put them there. We. Joint decision. But we'll find out. That's why we play the games. That's why we put it in the dirt. And find out starting in 8 days.
Let's go.
And then 15 days for the Longhorns beyond that. 2 weeks from tomorrow to be Longhorns in Louisiana Monroe. We'll be back. We'll reset these top stories and get you teed up for the rest of the day here on the Horn. It's a busy one, busy Friday, into the weekend. Johnny will give you a preview of what's coming up on the Big Ugly Tailgate tomorrow, too.
Let's go.
Yeah, being here on the Horn.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
Friday on the Horn, B&E with you. Johnny Rogers in the house. We just got their word during the break that you've got fans out there, Johnny, listening.
Fans and haters.
We always say in the afternoon, Mike Harge, Ball Don't Lie. Rod always says he knows everybody. He does know a lot of people.
Yeah, he does.
You do too, though.
I know a few.
You network well.
Been here a minute.
And you're a good networker.
I try my best.
I know a lot of people, but not compared to you and Harge. That's for sure. Craig Way did come in and confirm that is not the USC fight song. That is their fight on anthem.
Yep.
And it does make sense because there is a fight song that you hear when you go to USC football games. But Craig will have more on that coming up on Light the Tower. And speaking of songs and music, you know, we told you yesterday that the Big Ten has broken the bank on their new media mega rights deal. And how about this that is broken this morning? That apparently Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren, ink hardly dry on the deal with Fox, CBS, and NBC. Listen to this, JR. He says, apparently he sat down to interview with Real Sports on HBO, the monthly show, so this hasn't aired yet. But according to Front Office Sports, the commissioner, Kevin Warren, told Real Sports that he foresees the Big 12 having 20 members and paying players.
The conference paying players?
Yes. Yes.
Now, this is a new level.
That's a new level. That is interesting. Now, 20 members would lead right into what we said when this deal came down, that the escalator clauses to keep the money the same no matter if they add teams.
Yeah.
Would lead you right into the four Western. Because I really believe if you're the Big Ten, you're not dumb enough. You know you need a Western flank. You can't have USC and UCLA traveling across country for every road game. Everyone, right? I mean, obviously, if you could add the four other schools on the West Coast, well, now you have six.
Yeah.
And you can build schedules around that, and you play mostly on the West Coast when you go on the road. But then, you know, some of your games, you're going to travel to Lincoln, Nebraska, or you're going to travel to Minneapolis, Minnesota, but you do have a Western flank, not just for football, but scheduling for all of your sports.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to ask. Like, I mean, and as this moves on and teams are now having a, like, if you're going to play a lacrosse game, you got to go across the country for it.
Yeah. That's the stuff.
Or like a women's soccer game, you got to go up to Colorado. What?
Well, but we know $100 million pays for a lot annually.
Sure. You probably get a plane with
at the same
that.
Time, that's not what – I agree with those. That's terrible for student-athletes and the travel riggers. That's why you need four other teams.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where – I always said this when back in 2010 when it looked like Texas was headed to the Pac-12. And people say, well, man, we're going to be flying to Seattle. Well, look, they were going to have an eastern flank of the new look conference, and it would be Texas, Texas A&M, Oklahoma State, right? They'd have regional teams that they would play mostly,
yeah.
And then occasionally make the trip out to the West Coast or the Mountain Time Zone. And I think the Big Ten's going to end up doing the same thing. That's where you get that 20 teams, because they're at 16 now with the additions of USC and UCLA, four more West, depending on who those are going to be. But that's what Kevin Warren told HBO's Real Sports. But did you know this? Because CBS is a part of this deal?
Mm-hmm.
So how about this? Zay, can you cue the music? This is now going to be the open for Big Ten games. Not CBS. This is the CBS SEC game of the week, right?
But now it's...
Not anymore. They're taking the song.
The Big Ten?
Big Ten. Big Ten will get this.
Interesting.
CBS is out of SEC. This is now the Big Ten 2:30 game every Saturday afternoon.
Interesting, yeah. Well, and I still feel like if the Big 12 goes after a couple of those California teams, let's bring back the Southwest Conference.
I do like that idea you had yesterday. And this would be if the Big 10 adds those four to give a Western flank, that would obviously...
You have the SEC.
That would essentially...
Southeastern.
End the Pac-12 or whatever it is.
Uh-huh.
And that would allow the Big 12 to poach the other four remaining members, which would be Arizona, Arizona State, Utah, and Colorado. And you're right. And at that point, you could be back to the Southwest Conference.
We are in the South, and we are in the West. We are the Southwest Conference. Bring it back.
About that song just gave me a little goose chills. Dun, 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 dun. Now, that's Big Ten starting in 2023. This year, CBS, I wonder if the SEC is like, hey, can we change that song just for this year? Because you're going to the Big Ten. I don't know. It'd be interesting.
Thanks for having me on, E.
Hey, Johnny, thanks. And we'll be listening tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock.
Yep. Meet Casey Studdard. We'll be talking a lot of sports, barbecue in Austin, Texas.
Somebody pointed out that is a John Tesh piece of music.
Oh, yeah.
John Tesh composition.
He wrote the NBA on NBC theme song, too.
Yeah, I think you're right. Hey, Johnny, have a good weekend. We'll be listening to the Big Ugly Tailgate tomorrow morning. Go Austin FC.
Go FC, baby. Listos Verde. Let's go.
Austin FC will be at Minnesota tomorrow night. And, you know, their next home game is against LAFC next Friday night.
Number one versus number two. Get out to Q2 early. Tailgate. It's going to be a great atmosphere.
Yeah, they're in Minnesota this weekend. But, boy, big one coming with the top team in the MLS. That'll be a lot of fun. So a lot to look forward to next week. Obviously, maybe Monday we know the quarterback situation more. We'll have you locked in. Have a great weekend, everybody. Every hour podcast at hornfm.com.